All right. Well, welcome, everybody. This is Glenn Barnes with the Brooks Group, and this is our second teleseminar for fiscal year 2016. And today we're going to be talking about teaching recruiters to prospect. Joining me also from the Brooks Group is Mr. Joe Wilburn, and our special co-host for today's call is the Recruiting Service Commander, Colonel Nick. So, Colonel Nick, thank you for being with us today. And I wanted to start things off. We know that recruiting has been working through some tough challenges this year and still continues to push through, but we'd like to get your perspective on some of the current challenges, anticipated challenges coming up, and your views on what's going to be going on here in the near future.
Hey, everyone. It's Colonel Nick. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the intro there. And so, great points. Guys, I want to let you all know, as I said, you guys are the ones that lead the charge and make the engine go and the train move. But all the cliches aside, we all know that we've had, first of all, a significant reduction in our advertising budget this year. But I can assure you in the squadrons, my number one priority for this year, what it is we got you about $315K to use for local recruiting events. And on 1 October, whatever we get, the first thing that I'm funding up is local recruiting events, and I'm going to kind of hit about $500K aside. And that's the first priority, because this year our advertising budget, which usually ranges around $16 million, we got less than $8 million, so we had about $7.9 million and no foreseeable additions. Now, what we took out of that is we also transferred out of advertising our TDY funds so that we can support every TDY that your squadrons had up until the end of the year. So all the TDYs got taken out of the advertising budget because I thought it was more significant to make sure we had training going on, that you guys had the TDY funds to make sure that the mission would keep going. But that obviously that had an adverse impact on our branding and getting those leads which we generate from advertising. So just look at some statistics. So we're working on targeting right now. We could put in, you know, a million cops and a million cooks, but we got to find the right person for the right position at the right time right now. We're still going to put those cops and cooks in and other AFSCs because we'll have those leads and we'll put them in, but we really got to focus on that right person at the right time. This is where, you know, self-initiate and recruiter reads fall into play with prospecting. So some stats just to go over. So advertising and markets generate leads, but mainly branding awareness. So Jammers did a study, and right now the Air Force Reserve is only recognizable by 2% of the populace. They recognize the Air Force, but no one really knows about the Air Force Reserve. So that's why we do things like the Celebration Bowl, and we're going to try to get in with the SEC network on a year-round basis. So we're out there with our target accessions. Those things focus on branding and get the word out there. So what we want to focus on, though, is what does it bring us? So advertising, marketing, and generating leads is about 10%. What I'm saying is that brings about, what all those leads bring, we get about 10% of those that assess. Okay? So we obviously need a broader message, and we're going to continue to do a broader message and get those national leads to make sure we can get a higher rate for those accessions. But on the other hand, if we look at recruiter-generated leads, we assess nearly 50% of those leads. So if you have two people that you have recruiter-generated through prospecting, a guaranteed one of them is going to join. It's just numbers are numbers. We all know that. And, of course, unit referrals, which we want to get into the get one or the share your venture, that generates 60%. So that's where our big market is. So today, what it is, the Brooks Group is going to lead you in discussions of ways of teaching your recruiters and kind of generate that prospecting skill set back up. I think it's essential. I support it, and that's why I'm on the phone today with you guys. But the effectiveness of the program, you know, with any training program, as we all know, is always greatly improved by your leadership, by you participating, by you buying in. That's the key. If they see you buying in and you teaching that, then they're going to believe it, and the numbers are going to show. So really it comes down to is helping the recruiters and helping you make sure that we get the right people at the right time. We can't be sitting at the, you know, culinary section of a college or a community college when we're looking for cyber people. We got to be looking in the right places, and that's what we got to focus on here. So I'll open it up for a couple questions, but after that I'm just going to turn it back over to the Brooks Group. All right, I love it. Silence is golden. So, guys, I can't stress enough. We're going to get that 8,500 this year, and we need to push through. If that means we empty the tanks, we empty the tanks. But this is going to help us get there. You know how I feel about training, and I look forward to seeing each and every one of you in Orlando in October. And more importantly, I'll see the people at Lackland and Hill come next week. So out here for me. And, again, thanks, Brooks Group, for leading this discussion in this training. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Colonel Nick, for laying the foundation. This is Mr. Joe Wilburn with the Brooks Group. And before we lay into the second part of this dialogue, I want to share with you some housekeeping notes. First of all, we'd like to encourage comments or questions throughout the program. We'd ask you to please identify yourself. Just, you know, state your name and what organization you're with or what flight you're with, and just let us know who you are. But please identify yourself. Please feel free to jump in the conversation. In fact, we'll actually call on a couple of you to provide some input. We know who you are out there, and most of us here are familiar with everyone else on the line, so we'll actually call on you and ask you to provide and let us know about some of your best business practices. We'd ask for safety purposes that if you're in an automobile or in some other unsafe condition, please don't participate. Don't answer if we call your name, and don't feel like you've got to jump to this conversation. Get yourself to where you can be safe in an office and then jump on in. Lastly, please don't put your phone on hold if you have recorded music on your line. So if you need to mute your phone, use the buttons on your phone itself, or you can hit *2 to place a phone on mute, and to unmute it, it would be *2 as well. So, again, please don't put your phones on mute. Please do not put your phones on hold, but if you want to put it on mute, either use the buttons on your phone or hit *2 to place it on mute through this call system. We will not take roll throughout this call. However, what we'd like you to do in order to record your attendance is if you could send an email to Mr. Barnes at gbarnes@thebrooksgroup.com, and we'll use that email to verify your attendance. So again, it's gbarnes, Golf Bravo Alpha Romeo November Echo Sierra @thebrooksgroup.com. That's gbarnes@thebrooksgroup.com. Just let us know your name, your OL, your squadron, and then the 10-digit phone number you're calling in from, and we'll be able to record your attendance as we are required to report it to the training shop at headquarters. So again, we welcome you to the call, and we want to take this opportunity to learn about the good things that you're doing, some best business practices. It's an opportunity for you to brag about some things that your recruiters are doing, programs that you've seen, and observations you've made about prospecting in particular. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Barnes.
For the overview of what we're going to be doing, you know, we know that one of the most important things for the recruiter's success is the art and science of prospecting. And, you know, we could say art and science because, you know, prospecting is the science because there's universal principles that guide the process. But it's also an art because it requires a carefully designed set of skills to succeed. And today's program, we're going to talk about some techniques, strategies that you can use with your recruiters to increase their success in prospecting activities. So we're going to cover eight broad topics. One, about proper positioning, opening the door to successful prospecting. We're going to talk about your role in identifying the recruiting goals and making sure they're hitting the right markets. We will quickly review the five characteristics of high-quality leads, the three essential prospecting principles, prospecting leadership by your example. We're going to spend quite a bit of time there. We're going to review the six great questions that's going to help your recruiters be able to gain the appointments from those high-quality people that they're talking to. We're also going to look at four ways for you to keep your team organized, and then we're going to wind up with a little bit of a discussion on the power of building and using the prospecting Parthenon. Now, today's format, if you've been on previous calls, is going to be a little bit different. We're going to be counting on you, as Mr. Wilburn said, is we want to find out, hey, what's going on out there? You guys are in the field. You know what's happening. So we want to start right from the beginning, getting some input from you, find out, hey, what's working, what successes are you having? You can learn from each other, And also, you know, if there's any challenges out there, you know, your teammates may already have addressed it, and found a solution. So, again, we're going to rely on you all a lot today for this discussion. So immediately I'm going to go to you. If we're talking about prospecting, which is the focus of today's call, the first thing, though, we're going to talk about is positioning. So from your experience, why would we open a discussion about prospecting by first talking about positioning? What is positioning, and what role does it play in prospecting? And don't be shy.
Let's go out first to someone in Western Squadron to see if you can give us an idea about what positioning is all about and why would we want to talk about positioning as it relates to prospecting.
Hello, this is Sergeant Bender out in Hawaii.
Hey, Sergeant Bender.
I would say, you know, positioning is researching the areas in your zone where you can put yourself in the right place, where the people in that area, whether it be in a job or in a college or high school even, would be interested in the opportunities that you're going to have available to offer them.
Very well said. Very well said. So at the outset, you talked about getting yourself out there in the field in front of folks and creating the perception that you are everywhere and especially available to prospects. Any other thoughts? Anybody else have any other thoughts to share about positioning and how it relates to prospecting?
This is Callahan at Luke. If you have maintenance and you're going to a barber school or a cosmetology, it's probably not very good positioning. Just like Sergeant Bender said, I'm piggybacking on that. You got to know the market so you recruit for your wing, not stuff you don't need. Just as the commander said, we ain't got no 3S's. We got maintenance here, so we got to position ourselves correctly so we can fill the need of the wing.
Very good. Excellent. Anybody else? Any other thoughts on positioning and how it relates to prospecting? Okay, very good. I'll kind of recap a couple of the key points there. As was mentioned already, we're talking about creating the belief or the perception that you are everywhere and that you're accessible. And then choice relates to creating the belief that the Air Force Reserve is the first choice to explore when you're considering any sort of military service. And then primacy relates to becoming the recruiter and the organization that they think or hear about first, last, and always. So, and then also related to the gentleman from Arizona, it's really tied into being in front of the right people at the right time and creating that right perception, choice, and primacy when it comes to military service. So let's hear some ideas about what your recruiters are doing to better position themselves in the zone. What sort of activities are you teaching them, and what sort of things are you learning from them? Let's hear from someone else out there, maybe from Eastern Squadron now. And the question here for the Eastern Squadron folks is, what are some of the things that your recruiters are doing to be better positioned? I'm sorry, Central Squadron. How about some folks from Central Squadron? What are some of the things that you're doing to better position yourselves and what your recruiters are doing to better position themselves in their zones?
Sir, this is Sergeant Lambert from Fort Worth.
Okay.
Just one of the things that the recruiters are working hard at is really getting out there, whether it be going to their community colleges, especially if school is going to be starting up again, seeing what events are available, whether it be setting up a booth, trying to advertise in their paper so we can get those targeted recruiting requests in, different things like that to try and set themselves up, especially to close out this year and get ready for next year.
Excellent. So when it relates to schools, obviously we're in the summertime right now. Is there any reason why a recruiter or a team member could not get their calendar set right now for the next semester or the next beginning of the school year?
I don't see any reason, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else have any other thoughts about good ideas for positioning, activities that can occur now or the next several weeks?
Sergeant Modlin, what we're doing is we're trying to get our recruiters out in front of as many people as possible. So we're kind of encouraging, don't just go to one school. See if you can get with the district office to obtain their list, so when you send out an email, you're touching, 3,000 to 4,000 people, everybody in an entire school district, not just at that one school. So trying to get, like you say, create that we're everywhere look and that we're the first choice by contacting as many people as possible and really having efforts be as honed in as possible. You're being very efficient, not wasting time.
That's a great idea. So what I heard you say was instead of going to individual schools or in addition to going to individual schools for rosters, go at it at the district level and maybe cover several schools at one time. Super idea. Anyone else have something that's been real successful?
There was a female starter.
There was a lady on the who began to answer.
I'm Mr. Wilburn, it's Sergeant Pfeiffer from Westover.
Greetings, Sergeant Pfeiffer.
A couple events that we've just been attending that still popping up more and more, at least up here in the north, is recruiting events like military heroes, that kind of thing. And we picked up probably in the last 2 months, probably 4 or 5 IRR transfers. So you get Air Force, IRR, or prior service. So you're getting right in front of those people who are probably looking at the opportunity of coming back to serve. So that's been pretty profitable for us. So any of those military type of recruiting events.
Excellent idea. And yes, there seems to be a growing number of those military-specific job fair, recruiting, VA-related events that are going on, and having a presence there apparently is paying off for you, especially when it comes to RR. Great idea. Appreciate you sharing that. Anyone else?
Hey, sir.
What were you going to say?
I'm going to start rolling Europe.
Okay.
Yeah, what we found successful, and we're mainly an ISR based out here, obviously, is getting in with the local media. When we say local here, it'd be like the AFN, base papers, public affairs. Sometimes people aren't working. However, we've got a recruiter who is on the AFN twice a month and has increased their Palace Chase efforts greatly. And it's, getting out in the media, getting your name out there. I remember when I was at Birmingham, worked with Rick and Bubba, which is a syndicated show in the southeast, and that generated, leads for me, and hopefully it generated leads for other ones. But the media does help us out, whether it's, getting some airtime with them or going to the local TV stations, getting the PSAs out there. That's a benefit, and it's branding as well.
Cover what they did. Gotcha. That's a great idea, especially capitalizing on that media. And obviously, AFN is going to be very supportive. And you mentioned that Rick and Bubba, who else has had some degree with success in reaching out to local radio stations or TV stations to get some airtime? Anyone else out there?
This is Sergeant Tucker out at West. Back when I was at McConnell, we actually went to a radio station, and we gave them some swag, and they ended up putting pictures of the swag on their morning page. Along with a connecting website link to the reserve, and we actually received some leads from that.
Great idea. That link can be huge and seemingly very inexpensive and time-wise, very easy to do, but can really generate some good activity there. Yeah. Appreciate you sharing that idea. Anybody else want to share another idea before we kind of recap here?
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, I was just going to say, also, when I was a recruiter out at Peterson, I did an interview with a radio station as well. They were very supportive and just met with PA, told me what I couldn't say. So that brought in a couple of leads.
So can you share with us that process? Did you go to PA first or go to PA second after you made the initial contact? Help us work through for maybe a new flight chief. How to get that door open when it comes to hitting a radio station or a TV station?
Well, we went to the radio station, and we got through the gatekeeper first, made friends with her, and she hooked us up with their public relations representative, and we spoke with them about the idea of doing the interview. They agreed. Once they agreed to the interview, then we went to public affairs and, received our guidelines, gave those to the radio station, and proceeded to do the interview from there.
Very good. How did you shape the nature of the interview? Did you have a specific subject you wanted to address, or how did you say you wanted to do the interview?
Absolutely. I actually came up with some questions that I thought would be beneficial to my particular area, and that things that I knew that my that would benefit my zone. And I presented those to public affairs and got them to give the AOK, and I gave those questions to the radio station to ask.
And then they interviewed you as the local area expert?
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
Yeah, and that's really, really good. Again, because when we're talking about positioning, you know, it's how your recruiters are being perceived. And like she said, she tailored it to specifically what she was looking for. And by doing that, you know, she positioned herself as the subject matter expert on the Air Force Reserve. And that's what we're looking for in the, again, in that positioning, is about how you and the Air Force Reserve and your recruiters in Air Force Reserve are positioned in relation to how you can benefit someone personally and or professionally in their goals. And as we first discussed, you know, it's about three things. It's about the perception, the choice, and primacy. And then, you know, we discussed quite a few strategies for improving the positionings, things such as researching organizations, their influencers who belong to them, writing articles for different publications or interviews, getting in the paper, searching for information related to target markets. Studying opportunities offered by competitors is also important in the positioning because, again, it has to deal with, you don't necessarily want them thinking about the military, you want them thinking about the Air Force Reserve. Again, so, you know, we had some really good ideas there about the strategies to improving the positioning, and, you know, really until they've established positioning, it's really hard to open that door and start that conversation with potential leads, because the first thing they need to know is who the recruiter is and what they can do for them. So now that we've already discussed the positioning part, what we want to do next is transition into, about, you know, how you as the supervisor, the manager, flight chiefs, and I know we have staff people here and you do the same thing, is, you know, how are you identifying your recruiting goals and helping your recruiters attack the each target segment? And before we start talking specifically about that, and what we want to know is what type of information or do you need your recruiters to know for what they're prospecting for? What are some things you as a manager are taking into consideration when you're letting your recruiters know, hey, this is what we really need? What type of information are you providing them for them to go out and get the right people? In other words, like goals, anything like that, are they aware of needs? What type of things are you letting your recruiters know so they know who to go after?
Glenn, Mr. Barnes, this is Kane out at West.
Go ahead. Okay, go ahead, and then we'll get, there was someone else after you, we'll get right to them, but yeah, go ahead.
This is Sergeant Payne calling from March. Some of the things that we're working on right now at March is we're working on the manning plans for each individual unit. Once that information flows in for FY17, that information is distributed out to our recruiters so they know exactly what critical we're recruiting for going into the next year. We've also looked at, during the last quarterly training meeting, we looked at the lead and gain analysis for the previous fiscal years to kind of determine where our leads are coming from and where our gains are coming from based off lead source code.
All right, very good. Yeah, that's good information. And there was someone else that was about to talk as well. I'm sorry.
Hey, Mr. Barnes, this is Chief Masters, also from March.
Yeah.
Yeah, so another thing that we've been doing is, you know, we've got some critical skills. They're typically difficult to recruit for. So what we started doing is visits with, say, EOD or Intel or Comm. We've been meeting with the hiring authority, let them give us a briefing, talk to us about the specific needs, what the characteristics and what the education or background for those particular candidates would be, what makes, say, a good EOD, what can we look for. And that's been yielding a great result. We've seen an uptick in our interviews and hiring from those in finding really good fits.
Okay, very good. I like that. Yeah, getting with the people, hiring official, what are they looking for? That's a really, really good strategy. Anybody else? What are some things, your research you're doing, analysis you're doing to make sure that you're directing your recruiters in the right areas?
Hey, this is Chief George from Westover.
Hey.
How you doing?
All right.
Good, good. So each year about this time, to me, it's time to start doing my strat plan for next year, right? So it's gathering, you know, AFRIS is pretty good, and if you're keeping data throughout the year on who you're putting in, where they're coming from, along with starting your manning plans, your manning meetings with all your folks, knowing what the wing needs, knowing what the wing doesn't need, you can take all that data and form your strat plan, which you can then give to your recruiters so they can form theirs. And every year it changes. I think it's important. There's a lot of factors that you can't get around. Like, you know, Westover historically is 60 to 70% non-prior service. So when I go and talk to the wing about positions and manning and things like that, I have to let them know, here's the data over 10 years. You're going to get what you're going to get. However, you can tell me what you need, and we will do everything in our power to work it. So, you know, this year maybe we put in 70% non-prior, and we need to increase the prior service IRR, let's say, or fully qualified to help the wing. So when I give it to the recruiters, I tell them this year our target is, you know, instead of 15% IRR, we're going to bump it up and try to reach 25%. And here's the ways we're going to do it, whether it be, you know, lists like Sergeant 5% going to career fairs, whatever it is. There's many ways to do it. So I think you have to provide enough data for the recruiters to be able to go and then teach them how to do it.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent ideas there. You know, building that strat plan and then getting your strat plan out to the recruiters and helping them develop their strat plan, which should support the organization strat plan. So very, very good. Very good ideas there. Anybody else? All right. For those that may have the note taker, we do have a chart in there. It's very similar to the alignment. If you have the note taker and you're looking to fill in the information, what you see on the left-hand side, it goes high from rich to poor, being the target segment strength. And then across the top, we go from critical goals to non-critical. And all that does is help you and your recruiters visually see what needs to be going on. So in other words, if you've got a goal for something that's not really critical and you have a very poor target strength, then, you know, you may need to be looking at a different segment. And again, so if you've got that chart, you wanted to fill it in, what we're looking at is with critical goals, target-rich environment, that's where your proactive and reactive prospecting will be going on. If you go move over to the right on the top line, if it's a target-rich environment and it's really a non-critical goals, then probably you're going to be reactive. In other words, you're going to have people interested in it, because it's target rich, but it's not really critical to you. So you probably will be able to meet that goal by reactive. The most important, what you're going to find is when the goals are critical on the far left in that bottom box where you have a poor target strength, that's really where you're going to have to get into that precision prospecting. It may be in the maintenance, it may be in the cyber, the intel. But on those critical areas you need to reach with not a strong target strength, they're going to have to be very precision prospecting, trying to find that right person. Okay? So just wanted to make sure that for those that did have the note taker, I didn't want you left out in the dark about, okay, why do I have four blank blocks here? The other thing that we will do is we'll put the slides we'll let you do the note taker. I will get a set filled out and get them where the RSOT can send them out to you with all the blanks filled in and everything if you miss something.
Very good. And just as another reminder on the housekeeping, if you happen to have tuned in a few minutes late, we're not taking a roll call on this particular day. What we're doing is we're asking you to send an email to Barnes to record your attendance. So the email would go to gbarnes, that's G-B-A-R-N-E-S, @thebrooksgroup.com. Just identify your name, OL or squadron, and the phone number that you're dialing in from.
And you're more than welcome to respond to the email I sent to everyone that was registered, with that the phone lines were open. You can more than welcome to reply to that, and that will come directly to me as well. All right. So we've talked now a little bit about the strategies on the strategic level. What are we looking at? As a quick recap, and I expect this to take less than 30 seconds. I have no doubt y'all are going to be doing it, but just as a refresher, you know, when we're talking about the right person, we're looking at the five characteristics of high-quality leads. Hopefully, you're reminding your recruiters of this. Somebody real quick, tell me what are the five characteristics of the high-quality leads or prospects?
Have a need and aware of it.
There you go, have a need and aware of it. There's one.
Ability to make the decision.
Ability to make the decision. I heard relative sense of urgency. Two more.
Applicant
willingness to listen.
You're willing to listen.
Authority.
Huh?
Trust.
Trust. There you go. Yeah, that's it. So just again as a refresher. And that's something that in the, you know, the location where they're finding the prospects and leads is important, but as they're working that and finding the right person, the more characteristics the individual has, the better off they're going to be. It doesn't mean that you're always going to find someone with all five characteristics, but the more of those five they have, the better. What we caution is don't let recruiters settle just talking to the people that'll listen to them.
Okay, so what comes to mind to me when I always hear about the high quality prospects or the five characteristics of a highly qualified prospects is something that Colonel Brown used to use to help himself remember, and I find myself falling back on it, and it's the acronym NATLU, and it's need and aware of it. Ability and authority would be the A, trust would be the T, and then the L would be the willingness to listen. And the U would be the relative sense of urgency. So NATLU is the reminder for those approaching senior citizenhood like myself to help give us a quick refresher. Anybody have any thoughts as to why it's important for our recruiters to really focus on those five characteristics? Any thoughts about that? Why is it important for to continually reinforce that with recruiters?
Chief Masters at March. I find often that they don't meet those characteristics, then they're either wasting their time or they're spending their time. They're definitely not investing their time in the right candidates at the right time.
Excellent. So it's about focusing their time and making sure it's invested as opposed to just doing busy work or being in front of the people, simulating being busy when it's actually not going to prove to be very productive. Thank you for your input there, Chief. Okay, let's move on to some essential prospecting recruiters that's critical for your team members to understand. And the first one we've identified is the better job you do of finding and attracting qualified prospects, the higher your closing average will be. And this really ties into what Chief Masters just said, which is you got to be in front of the right people and making sure that they're investing that time and not just spending or wasting that time. The second key point, I'm going to go through these relatively quickly, would be your future success in recruiting is directly proportional to the quality and breadth of your prospect file. Let's hear from someone out there that would like to talk to us about how it is that you review the pipeline for your recruiters. What sort of things are you looking for? What sort of feedback do you give? Do you have some special tools that you use to really dig deep into the pipeline or Diapers TF? Anybody have any thoughts to share about that?
This is Master Sergeant Pruitt, Critical Skills Central.
Hey, Sergeant Pruitt.
How are you, sir? So, I have a tracker for my team, and I'm sure most flight chiefs do. For me, it's unique because it's OA processing, but what I'm looking for is steady processing. So every time that they complete one of the portions that they need to complete, then I'm looking that they're doing that in a timely manner. And when a large amount of time has lapsed by, then that's when we're able to identify, okay, you're lacking in this area.
Very good. So what are some of the elements of that tracking tool?
What do you mean elements, sir?
Well, what does it look like? What data points do you look at? How do you pull it together, the tracker that you have? Yeah.
For me, it's an Excel product. So it is a table product that has our process as close as it can be throughout on the table. So every time that they complete that process, then it's going to highlight that block automatically with conditional formatting. It's going to highlight that block in green, showing it's good. It's good to go. If they are projected out and it's a future date, then it's not going to highlight it in green. So at least it tells me, okay, they haven't moved to the next step or done the next step yet, but at least it's scheduled out. Instead of me saying, why haven't you completed MEPS? Why haven't you done this? I can at least see that the reason is they're projected to go. It's been scheduled. So it really kind of tells me where they're at and how quickly they're processing that person within reason. And if I start to identify certain things, like OA specifically, I have a start date. So if I see, and it keeps a time calendar off to the side, so if I see an applicant has been open for 200 days, but yet they were only added to the scroll 30 days ago, then I start to question, what have you been doing for 170 days? You could have had that scroll approved.
Excellent. Excellent. That really ties in that question of accountability and providing, and able to provide feedback and sort of a tracking mechanism for where that particular prospect is in the process. Excellent. If you wouldn't mind, we'd like to be able to share those tools. So if you wouldn't mind, you know, sending a copy, a sanitized version to Mr. Barnes, just basic data, that might be helpful and give us the ability to share it with other members on the call. Or obviously anyone could reach out to Central and ask them for that as well. Anybody else have any other tools or unique ways or not so unique ways of digging into the pipeline?
This is Sergeant Hudson in Central.
Yes.
We talked about it the last UTA, but basically I use a format for tracking in AFRIS to basically track what step they're in. So when I click, you know, and look at their individual or even the info and the total flight, I can see exactly how many people we have in each one of the steps. So in the investigate or the I step, it just means that they've set an appointment, but the M or the P is probably one of my most important ones. The P stands for they're somewhere in the physical process. So when I look at it, I can quickly see, okay, we've got 60 people that are in the physical process. So I can quickly look at it and track it.
Very good. Very good. Excellent.
A would be like waiting for a position, or T, they're ready, pretty much ready to go. We're just waiting for the game date.
Okay. Very good. Anybody else have any thoughts to share about that particular tool or any other tools that you're using or methods to gauge and provide feedback on the pipeline?
Hey, this is Chief Christoph out of Travis.
Greetings.
What I do, along with the spreadsheets that, like Sergeant Pruitt was talking about, I also tracked med read submissions. We kind of get bogged down at MEPS at San Jose and Sacramento. So I have a tracker with every applicant's name on it from all of my recruiters, and if I see it, and I physically put a note in there of when a med read is submitted. So if it goes beyond the 5 days or so, I'll engage with the LINCOs instead of the recruiters doing it to try to move that process forward. So it kind of facilitates the MEPS process moving along a little quicker when I know everyone that's standing by for a med read.
Excellent. Great follow-up and accountability tool there as well. Appreciate you sharing that one. Okay, anybody else have any thoughts before we move on to the last essential prospecting principle? Okay, well, the third and last of those essential prospecting principles would be being able to ask the right questions of the right people in the right time, in the right places. And if you do so, you'll always have plenty of high-quality prospects. So I'll turn the next block over, block E, over to Mr. Barnes. And over to you, Mr. Barnes.
All right. All right, so we want to move on now. We've talked a little bit back in positioning. I want to get into some more detail on that. And what we're going to be talking about here is prospecting leadership by your example. So in other words, we want to expand some more on what are some things that are really working for you, helping your recruiters by example, whether it's zone canvassing, school visits, unit visits. What are some things that are really working from you? And we really want to get a lot of input on this. We want to spend a lot of time, because the best way to learn is from each other on things that could really be working for you that may work at other locations. We know that not all locations are created equally, and what works at one may not work at another, but it's worth really exploring this. So specifically, we're looking at, if you're already actively involved in helping the recruiters become more effective in prospecting, how or what are you specifically doing with the recruiters to make them better with prospecting? So let's really go deep in this, and let's share a lot of ideas on here on what are you doing and what's working for you and your recruiters.
Mr. Barnes, from Firefighter Westover.
Yes.
So the one thing that I had done with Sergeant Gadd to the area, we are getting we're picking up quite a few leads and accessions now. We went into the Navy base, Groton sub base. He was hesitant in the beginning because he was like, "Oh, they're not going to want us, to come into the CAP briefing." I went in with him, and I did probably the first three or four briefings. He's on his own now, but he's picking up and just put in. He's coming drilling twice a month. He's probably gotten at least two a month, since he's been doing it. So I would tell you, even if you're a little leery about other branches of service, it's definitely worth just going in. I did, and just said, "Hey, I know the Navy Reserve comes in. We'd just like to be another opportunity." And they were a little hesitant in the beginning, but now it's an open door. So I would, I would really highly recommend that people do look at that.
Excellent. Yeah, that's it. And you're going to run into that with recruiters that may be hesitant to try something, just because it's not familiar to them. And sometimes all they need is that you leading by example, taking them out there, showing them how it's done. So that's really, really good. You're getting into those other bases. What are some other things that are going on out there, ways that you're really able to show your recruiters effective ways for prospecting?
Chief Short, you're on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who incorporated or where that whole, I don't want to take credit for it, but, they started doing the flyers at pizza places, putting flyers on the boxes,
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where that originally came from, but I know, our recruiter at Providence, Rhode Island, he ended up getting quite a few leads on. And that's a bunch of people for so far, that are really.
I think you're breaking up, Storm Pfeiffer.
Yeah, breaking up a little bit. The flyers
the flyers have come from AFRAC that are approved on the dashboard. Printing those out in color and providing them to these pizza places who are willing to put them on their boxes, tape them on the boxes.
Oh, okay.
Give them out as pizza.
Well, you're right. Someone from Scott actually did that originally, sent it out, and our recruiters took a few of them really took to it, and it's amazing how many people were willing to do it. I have to be honest. I think a lot of the issues with prospecting, by the way, this is Chief George, sorry. I think a lot of the issues is confidence, right? And, we wait for money. We want tons of advertising money. But I remember when I started, I'd hit the streets. It didn't take any money to go get in your car. and go and engage with people, right? So, and it's encouraging them that it's okay to be told no. It's okay for people to not want to help you. You got to keep persevering through that and find those that do want to help you. I think that's the issue now, is we've become dependent on Blaine Warren and RSAA to do our work for us, where we have the tools, we just have to share it.
That's a great point, Chief, and it's easy to forget, especially when you've been recruiting for 5, 7, 15 years, as most of you flight chiefs have, it's easy to forget that nervous feeling you had in your first year on the street, and the nervous feeling you had about the first time you go into a radio station or into a pizza parlor or just to take a penny cup. And I think it's important as a first-line supervisor to kind of put yourself back in that mindset and, keep in mind that sometimes you just got to grab their hand and actually physically go do it and get that confidence level built up and actually to be able to get rejected a few times and still bounce. Them watching the boss get rejected and getting right up and going to the next place without any sort of hesitation is a great lesson out there. So I appreciate you bringing that point. Does anyone else have any examples like that of some shyness on behalf of the recruiters or lack of confidence to go out and do some things that you know can be done?
Yeah, so Mr. Wilburn, Chief Christoff.
Go ahead, Chief Christoff.
So what we did was, if any of you have been on the West Coast, we do volleyball is a big thing out here, and I take my daughter to all these events where I see thousands of kids, high school kids, and I see vendors set up, and I asked one of the vendors, how did you get a table set up here? And he directed me to the CEO of the organization, and I went and I met with her, and she was like, we've been looking for recruiters. And I was like, hey, you found one. What do I need to do a table set up? And she put me in touch with her coordinator, and I got a list of, 15 events throughout Northern California where she waived the vendor fee for us. And we've had a couple huge ones out in Reno with, there was 4,000 or 5,000 high school age girls, playing volleyball. And we went out there and did a setup. Still waiting to see if that's going to pay dividends, but it's a great way to get in front of a lot of typically qualified people.
Great idea. There's a whole world of high school sports and club sports at that level, where they do these massive tournaments at full-size arenas. And most of you probably experienced, a lot of people are wanting to give things free and open access to military recruiters and just military folks in general. Anybody else have any other ideas along those lines?
So this is Master Sergeant Pruitt, Critical Skills. So my recruiters, OA, they are targeting very specific career fields, very specific programs. Yes. And I think, and it can be across the board, a lot of recruiters, because I've done it, is you assume that what you're doing is effective. Just because you're doing it doesn't necessarily mean it's effective. And sometimes we have to put ourselves, at least I did, and I know others have, put yourself in the potential prospect's shoes. And is that going to get your attention? If you weren't a recruiter, it grab your attention. Are you just sharpening a pencil and sitting next to a computer making the assumption that that's going to entice somebody to call the Air Force Reserve? Or
Right. Are
you out there actively working it? One of the things that we are doing is going back to positioning and targeting and making sure that we're hitting the right people. So rather than go to law schools, for example, to try to target lawyers or soon-to-be lawyers to be JAGs in the program when they don't meet the eligibility requirements, we take it a step further and say, okay, let's start going to bar association meetings where we have a captive audience and can get up and speak in front of them to target the right people at the right time.
Great idea. Fantastic idea of targeted prospecting and getting right to the folks that have the ability to have the audience to really be able to support your prospecting intentions there. Fantastic idea.
Yeah. Anybody else before we move on? We've got some really good ideas, good discussion here. So if anyone else, we'd love to hear some more if you got some out there, things that are really working for you in ways that you've been able to
lead by example and help your recruiters improve prospecting or improve your confidence in prospecting? All right, if not, you know, we've talked about the prospecting and we've been building up to, okay, now that I'm finding the right people at the right place at the right time, how am I going to actually get them to talk to me? And you probably all are familiar with the six great questions. Also, we call it the mini imp. And Mr. Wilburn, if you would, let's talk a little bit about that, the about those six great questions.
Yes, what I'd like to do is kind of give a quick overview of the six questions and then kind of dig in deeper on some of the favorite questions that you may have and then talk about why it is that it may be important to understand these. So question number one is what is the primary purpose of making or accepting a phone call?
Six questions rather.
Oh, I'm sorry. What prompted you to contact the Air Force Reserve to begin with? So again, that question is, what prompted you to contact the Air Force Reserve to begin with? Second one is, what have you seen or heard about the Air Force Reserve that appeals to you? And third is, where are you in the decision-making process? Fourth is, who else besides you is involved in your decision to consider the Air Force Reserve? Fifth is, what factors will you consider to help you make your decision to join? And the last of the six great questions is, if the Air Force Reserve proved to be the right career choice, how soon would you like to get started? So that being an overview of the six great questions, someone helped me articulate why it is that it's important for recruiters to understand those questions. Why are those questions important?
Oh, Sergeant Bender.
Yeah.
I'd say those questions are very important because those initial answers you get help you think about what you're going to ask for the rest of the interview, or kind of set the stage for how you're going to approach the rest of the interview.
Excellent. And thanks for saving my bacon. I didn't think anybody was going to step up and answer that question. But yeah, that is going to tell you about whether they meet the five characteristics of a qualified buyer, and it's going to lay the foundation for your next questions. And it's really a way of opening the door and building trust and rapport without having to get into interrogation mode. Very comfortable, very natural questions that are easy to ask, that are non-threatening. Anybody else have any other thoughts about those six great questions?
Mr. Wilburn, Chief Matthews.
Yes.
How are you doing today? A lot of good information you get from there is you can tell what's working for you. So you'll know if you did a proactive effort or you did any sort of targeted recruiting, you'll get feedback on where they heard about it, influencers, or other things within the community that you know are working for you. So, you know, hey, note to self, that works for me to check that for your advisor's office or whatever the case might be.
Okay, excellent. There was a little bit of kind of broke up on that transmission there. Can you restate it again real briefly, please?
Yes, sir. Sorry about that. The one of the questions you asked, you know, what prompted you to contact the Air Force Reserve, you know, where did you hear about us? It helps you know what's working for you in your community so you can do more of that. Or if you know that your career advisors at schools or wherever the case might be are working for you, that you can give that a little more attention, or at least maybe even contact somebody and say, you know, thank you, or whatever the case might be. But it lets you know what's working in your zone to let people know that you're there.
Excellent. So you're right. Very often the answers to those questions will help you understand where that lead is coming from, how they came to you. If it came through a reference or from a school guidance counselor, you'd be able to backtrack and circle around with them and say thanks for making a referral, or thanks for speaking highly of the Air Force Reserve, and actually have some accountability and understanding for where that lead actually came from. So another great reason for being able to ask those questions.
Now I've got a trick question for you all out there. Maybe not a trick, but would you have your recruiters asking these six questions or some version of these six questions before or after they did the CC methods? Someone take a shot.
I'll say before.
Before, after.
Okay. Before, okay, I've heard before and after. All right. After CC methods? Okay. I've heard before and after. I'm not sure that there's a right answer. Here's a thought on it, how I used to think about it, how I present it, is these six questions are actually pretty simple to ask, or versions of them. And what they can do is all six of those questions can generally be asked and answered within about 2.5 to 3 minutes at the most. The reason that I like to do them first, or had my recruiters ask those similar questions first, was they're non-threatening and they don't sound like interrogating. Now, you don't want to waste time on a disqualified lead, so CC methods is very important. However, by this, you're putting some focus on them. You know, what is it that you may be looking for? What brought you here? You know, it's all about them. So that's just something to consider, is if you do these questions first, they're non-threatening. It doesn't sound like an interrogation. It's more finding about who they are. They can be done fairly quickly and easily transitioned into the CC map is by simply as, you know, if everything they're telling you is they're very interested, they're ready to make a decision, they're ready to move forward, you know, all that information, it's easy to transfer, even with an easy transition statement, something as simple. Well, you know, you understand that, you know, in the Air Force Reserve, we do have some fairly high standards, and just to determine your eligibility and make sure that this is the right opportunity for you, do you mind if I ask you a few more questions? Because they've already answered some questions that aren't really that personal, and it can build that trust and rapport where they may be a little more open and receptive to the CC mapping questions, which can be quite personal. Just a thought, that's kind of our perception on it. What works for you and your recruiters, though, at the end of the day? I just wanted to throw that out there as something for consideration to do it before you actually ask the CC methods.
Okay, Mr. Barnes,
go ahead.
So when you were in your answer there, you said, you know, I understand you don't want to waste time on a disqualified applicant, but those five characteristics, I'm finding, you know, we can have applicants all day long that are medically qualified, but if they don't meet those characteristics, and those questions that you're talking about directly relate back to those characteristics of a qualified applicant, if you don't have those, you could be spinning your wheels once they get medically qualified. So I think they go hand in hand, and it does build trust and rapport before you get to the nuts and bolts and you're asking questions about drug use and law violations, if you've taken the time to ask these important questions as well to find out if they're qualified in the sense of, are they going to join when all is said and done?
Yeah, absolutely. And I did not pay him to say that, but that is kind of right on the money, is why we teach it the way we do, is to ask the questions first. It'll help identify the five characteristics, where they're at in that, how many they have, build that trust and rapport, and they will likely be more receptive and more open and honest when answering the CC method. So thank you very much for that.
We've got about a minute, so I'd kind of like to take some time to recap here briefly some of the things that we've covered. And I want to go back to Colonel Nick's comments at the outset. He said a couple of things that should really be ringing a bell. One is the marketing budget is strained. And two is that they've had to borrow money from a marketing budget, which means that there's even fewer dollars because that some of that marketing budget is going into essential TDY and travel costs. So what that means is that there's a greater emphasis on the need to be proactive to recruit, using the verb form of recruit and a prospect. And we started off the beginning of our conversation talking about how positioning ties into prospecting, the importance of developing positioning in the form of creating that perception, that you're everywhere and that your team is everywhere. Creating the choice, creating the belief that the Air Force Reserve is the first choice to explore when considering military service, and then primacy, becoming the recruiter and recruiting team they hear about or think about first, last, and always. So that's about that positioning aspect. Then we kind of moved into a short discussion about NATLU, the five characteristics of quality prospects, and your efforts as the boss to focus and make sure the recruiters are investing their time in front of the right people. How do you create a scenario where they're investing as opposed to spending or wasting their time in front of the right people? Then we moved into a more in-depth conversation about some of the specific things that you can do as leaders. And the item that rung the bell the most with me is about recruiters are shy. Sometimes they lack the confidence. We heard a stat from RSOT a few weeks ago, and they had talked about upwards of 60 to 70% of recruiters in the field right now have less than 2 years of experience. And I'd ask you to put yourselves back into their mindset, because that's a whole lot of newbies out there, and they're still got their training wheels on. And very often they're counting on you. They need you to be out there with them. And you gave some great ideas for how you can help them penetrate the market between going to radio stations, the pizza labels, the AFN, lots of different ideas and opportunities for you to go out there and physically show them the way. So I appreciate your involvement, your dialogue, and we're going to leave the final comment to Mr. Barnes.
I'm going to get you out of here quick. As a heads up, we're probably going to ask for your help through RSOT. When we're out in October with you guys at your annual, it looks like that we're going to be with the line recruiters and we're going to be looking at Parthenons. So what we're going to be asking them is to bring, if they were on production this year, bring their current year Parthenon and bring one for next year. And our plan is for each of the line recruiters to leave our session with an actionable plan. So when that starts to develop, if we keep in mind letting them know your priorities from your organization, your flight, so when we're there working with them, helping them develop their Parthenon strat plan for the year, they're already aware of where their focus needs to be. And with that, we appreciate your time. We appreciate you being on the call today. Definitely appreciate the participation. Great crosstalk. Hopefully you took away a couple things. If we can ever help you in any way, don't hesitate to contact us. Both of us are available, G. Barnes or J. Wilburn at thebrooksgroup.com. Thank you all, and you all have a great day and good recruiting, and looking forward to hearing about you all making goal this year. So thank you all, and you all have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Central out.
Yes, they're gone. Yeah, they're gone. Oh, did you want something? No.